Welcome to this podcast from Barlow McCarthy. We hope you find insight and a catalyst for change in the topics we discuss. Now here is today's presentation.
I'm delighted to have with me Shannon Sullivan, who is the President and Chief Operating Officer for Women and Infants Hospital in Providence, Rhode Island. She was the previous Vice President of Operations for both Kent Hospital and Care New England after serving in various leadership and clinical roles within the system. During her tenure at Care New England, she has led several operational initiatives, including setting up a field hospital during COVID. She has a real passion for working at women and infants, given that that's where her experience at Care New England started. When she was in the social work department, she completed her undergraduate at Providence College, her master's in social work from Boston College, and her master's in healthcare leadership and business from Brown University. Shannon, it's great to have you with me today. Thanks for doing this.
Allison, I'm so excited to virtually see you.
It's great. And I'm delighted. I knew you were the best person to talk to about having difficult conversations. So I can think of several situations in which leaders will find themselves having to have those tough conversations. So I want to give you a few scenarios. And could you speak about it? Maybe there's some common themes across all of them, but there may be some nuances if you could call out as well. So the first would be the organization is underperforming and you need to have a conversation with your leadership team. How do you have that tough conversation?
You know, I've been at a lot of organizations that have had some performance issues, and I don't think that's unusual in healthcare right now, even for some of the giants in the industry. And having a conversation with your team has similar themes to the ones that you have with individuals, but you have to pivot it a little differently. People don't like hearing bad news. You don't like providing bad news. And so for me, there's a couple key ingredients to those conversations. And the first is you can't under-communicate anytime, good news or bad news. You can't under-communicate it because people hear it in different ways at different times. So don't assume that your organization is having some challenges and you're going to be able to talk to your team just once and that that is going to make them magically pivot to better performance or what the organization needs. It's also going to feel really personal to people. So not only can you not over-communicate it, but you have to be really specific about what the issues of the organization are and what you need them to do. There's going to be things out of their control. For an example, something that we look at quite frequently is our payer mix here at this hospital, who we're getting paid by, what those reimbursement rates are. So we may, in fact, have a month where we have great volume, but we had a group of payers paying us that were not as lucrative as other months. And so that's something the team can't control. And so it's a good information point, but it's something that they can't change. So when I'm having these difficult conversations with teams, I'm really trying to over-communicate and provide them a path of exactly what I need them to do. So they can't control, in this example, what our payer mix is, but they can control their expense management. So what are the key points that I need from them? And what is the timeline around that? And how are we going to circle back and have that conversation and see where we are in the next couple of days? And then even though I'm trying to organizationally communicate to a wide group of people, I tend to try to pick a couple people to make sure that I am touching base with them personally, who may have a greater impact, who I think might be a flight risk from the organization, and this news makes it difficult for them to hear, and that I'm reaching out to them and meeting with them one-on-one individually to say, I know this was hard to hear. I know you're working on X, Y, and Z. What is it I can do to help you to achieve that in the timeline that we set out as a team? And then coming back again in a week, here's where we've been. Here's where we are. What do we need to do next? I think that the most important thing is giving people the context of what's happening and really providing them a pathway of what's in their control to help control that situation.
Great. And so when you're doing the one-on-one with an individual team member that, and let's in that example say they are underperforming themselves. So not necessarily their function, but they individually, how do you have that tough conversation?
You know, you need to prepare ahead of time. You can never walk into these conversations not having prepared. And I think that was my biggest learning curve as a young leader, really understanding what I needed to do to prepare. And so a lot of it is knowing yourself, knowing your own communication style, and preparing the point, you know, really succinct points that the person that you're talking to needs to work on. Walking into a room and saying, you're underperforming, you're just not doing your job the way that I need you to do, leaves people feeling lost, quite frankly, and really disengages them from you as their leader. And so what I tend to do is I try to prepare ahead of time. What is it exactly that I'm not seeing from this particular person that I would expect to based on their role and their scope, and be realistic with myself about whether that really is their role and scope and whether I've provided them enough supports to do that. And then going and being really direct in that conversation. Allison, you know, you bring a lot to the team. We really enjoy having you here, but you consistently don't make deadlines. I need this from you every Friday. And now you haven't been able to do that. Talk to me about what your challenges are in getting that to me on Fridays. And some of that you're going to be able to mitigate with them. And then at the end of the day, some of it's their own responsibility and you're putting them on notice. But the more exacting you can be as to what the problem is, makes it less a personal issue and more of a business decision.
And it also is not them as a failure. It's just a piece of what they do for work that's not performing well. So you separate them as the human versus their performance.
I had to say to someone recently, that, you know, you're an amazing physician and you're a wonderful person and you have a tremendous amount of skill sets, but it's not exactly the skill sets that I need moving forward. This role has evolved. And I think that you met those skill sets when we started this role, but now I'm not sure that you can transition. And so I need to see A, B, C, and D to know if moving forward, this is still the right role for you. That was very hard. One of the nicest people I've ever met. But it just doesn't fit maybe anymore. The organization was different a couple of years ago. The role was different. And here we are now. And I think we're seeing a lot of that transition in healthcare. Roles are changing dramatically. And your skill set, you as an employee, your skill set doesn't necessarily fit at times with what the organization needs. And that's okay too. You shouldn't try to be something that you're not. You can develop yourself in a lot of different ways. But at the end of the day, we have a core skill set. And that's, we should find jobs and look for opportunities that fit that.
Yes. And so that leads me to the physician leader. So in this case, you know, we probably have people who are great clinicians, wonderful people. I know in your case, you have physicians who've been there forever, probably their entire careers.
Yes.
But they're not, as you said, right for what the organization needs in that leadership position now. Anything more you want to say about that as it relates to the docs?
I do think physicians are slightly different than the rest of the workforce. Physicians are oftentimes made, lots of people are oftentimes made leaders of their divisions or their departments because they were exceptional clinically. They had very good rapport with their patients. They had very strong research. They were able to provide really sound clinical care. And so it makes sense for an organization to say, this is a good role model for the rest of the department. That's who we want to put in as a leader. But those skill sets don't necessarily help you lead a department, a division, help you have those courageous conversations. Most physicians haven't been trained in having courageous conversations. And so, you know, I think there's two parts to that. I think we as an organization and I have done more recently a much better job, but historically have needed to do a better job in training our doctors and giving them the skill sets they need if they're interested in having that leadership position. To be clear, I think a lot of healthcare organizations also haven't said to leaders, physician leaders going into roles, now that you're interested in being a director of a division, that means this, this, and this, as well. That means talking with physicians about their, volume. It means talking to physicians about their behavior. It means talking, analyzing data around patient experience. And so we need to, and I think we've done a better job about being very transparent about that. Then we need to provide them the skills. And I think the Physician Leadership Academy, Allison, that I believe you were involved in when you were here, it has been a great tool for physician leaders. Executive coaching, another great tool in the toolbox for our leaders. But then finally, really working with our leaders upon that. Not every division leader, like in any physician, like in any job, not everybody's going to make that jump. And it will affect the division if you don't have a leader leading the division in a way that makes sense for the organization. Nobody wants that. Not the patients, not the other physicians, not the leader himself or herself. And so it's important that we provide them the tools, but then also know when maybe their clinical strengths didn't necessarily morph into the leadership skills that we wanted to see.
Right, right, exactly. So maybe the toughest of them all, I don't know, but could be, is the boss. The boss has done something or said something that created a discomfort, and you as the direct report have to have that conversation with the boss. How do you handle that?
Well, you have to know your boss. I think that's the first thing. You have to, in like any relationship, those grow over time and you learn things about each other and how each other takes news and how people communicate. And I'm really cognizant of that. And I talk to a lot of people about that, like your relationship with your boss is important. Your understanding of how your boss likes to receive communication, wants to receive communication, because then how they take that difficult conversation will provide the best outcome for both of you if it's in a way that they like to receive their communication. Generally, you never want to surprise your boss in public with bad news. That's a good way to act. And sometimes it accidentally happens, right? You saw numbers the night before that they saw the next day in a public forum, and you didn't have enough time to prep them for that. And you can go back and say that. And at the same time, always be humble. This is a person with a great, they're your boss, and whether or not whatever that relationship looks like, they have more responsibility than you. And so sometimes, when I get frustrated or when I'm trying to understand how to best approach a situation, I try to remember this is going to sound silly. I try to use the phrase in my head, we're going to treat this situation with grace, and we're going to be kind in what this person is going through as I try to meet my own needs. And then I just, you got to be really direct. Your boss doesn't know what you're asking for unless you're really direct and you're providing that information. And so you got to do it one-on-one. You got to do it face-to-face, which can be really hard in the Zoom world and not always possible. And you've got to be really direct, and in many ways, it's almost like a marriage in that way. You've got to be able to say, this happened. These are the outcomes that I think might happen with that. I need your direction in how we should handle this, how you'd like me to handle this so that it meets your expectations and those of the company. And if you don't necessarily agree, you need to say that. I think that's going to be a difficult decision. At the end of the day, it's your decision as the CEO or the president or the CFO. But I'm going to lay out for you all of the reasons why that might not work. Oftentimes, I think people get stuck with their bosses in this power control. Like, they didn't do what they wanted me to. I can't do what they want me to do. They weren't listening to me. It's oftentimes not about that. It's just that whatever the pressures are on their plate, you might have to pivot and do something that you didn't necessarily, that in a way that might not necessarily be the way you would have done it. And you both have to get on the same page as to what those reasons are.
Yeah, I can recall I was in a meeting with a prior boss and I blindsided him with something. And he then barked at me with in a way that was like really shocking and left the room silent. I had to go back and have the one-on-one. But as you've just articulated, I first had to apologize for the fact that I blindsided. So it triggered his reaction.
Right.
But then had to say, it works for me more effectively if you could have spoken with me outside of that room, one-on-one, instead of, you know, blowing at me there. It ended up being, you know, a great conversation, but I had to really think about the right way to do it. And as you say, well, what was the pressure he was under? What did I do to trigger it? And then how do we just reset the relationship again?
Yeah. And it feels impossible to do so, but you can't personalize those conversations. It feels very personal. And so when I'm working with my own direct reports on difficult conversations, I'm very cognizant that how I'm talking to them feels very personal to them, whether or not I mean it to be. It's not easy. And sometimes you'll work for you'll have a dream job, but you'll work for a boss that's not your dream boss.
Right.
And so like any relationship, you have to figure out how much time and energy and investment you're going to put into that to make it work. And you have to look at it as that, a relationship.
Right. Exactly. So you did refer to preparing for these conversations. Can you get a little specific about how you do that preparation for yourself?
Yes, I have to take about a half hour by myself ahead of time and really think about what the problem is. It's easy for things to snowball, right? And all of a sudden the problem is really, you think the problem is A, B, and C, but when you back up, really the problem is, what's the performance? What's the skill set? What's the tools that I've provided the person? And so you really have to think about all of those things ahead of time and spend the time mapping out exactly what you're going to say and what your details are going to be. I don't make them too long. It's too much for people to hear bad news for a prolonged period of time. They don't want to hear me talking anymore. So I try to make these 5 to 7 minute conversations. I try to preface the conversation by saying, I'm about to have a really difficult conversation with you, because then people prepare themselves a little bit. And it doesn't feel like I'm just walking to their office and blindsiding them. Like I said, I try to be really detailed in, this is my expectation. This is what's not being met, you know, or, you know, unfortunately, the follow-up conversations is, we talked about this. You said you were going to do this and we're still back here. And then end the conversation with what my expectations of the next steps are going to be. And sometimes the end of that, the conversations are, and I don't think you're right for this role anymore. So I'm going to have our human resources director meet with you next to talk about how we're going to make some transitions out of this role. Those are hard. You have to prepare for them. You have to anticipate they're going to be difficult. If they stop being difficult for you, you might not be in the right position anymore. Because you do care about the people that work for you. And I know that I just said it's not personal, but you can still care about people at the same time. And then when you've taken almost that weight off yourself of that difficult conversation, try to remember they've just taken the difficult, that weight on. And so oftentimes I'll say to people, it's okay if you feel like you need to take some time today, you know, go home, or, you know, come back tomorrow. And then the hardest part is, I often say, let's follow up tomorrow about what we've just talked about, or let's follow up in 2 to 3 days, you know, if it's over a weekend, of what we've just talked about, and talk about next steps from there, because they want to know when they're leaving, because they've only heard half of what you've said.
Right.
But they're going to have another touch point with you in a couple of days.
Yeah. And if they're not leaving, the touch point then becomes just your articulation again of what they need to do and when you'll follow up.
And what I expect to see between now and then. And specifically, you can't be, just to go back to the beginning, you can't over communicate enough, and you can't be specific enough. And just when you think, I couldn't be more annoying, I've told this group of people this 100 times and they think I'm crazy. Is the time that somebody will come up to you and say, I had no idea that we changed, you know, doing it this way and that way. And you want to, you know, bang your head against the wall. But that's what I've learned. I've learned to be annoying, essentially.
Yeah. Yeah. You just mentioned anything that you do in follow-up with the person, but I also am wondering, what do you do as follow-up with yourself after you've had one of these difficult conversations?
I suppose drinking alcohol isn't the right answer.
Well, it could be added to the mix.
I'm a firm believer in self-reflection. I'm a firm believer that insight is a practice. I was lucky enough as a young person in graduate school to have a mentor who really talked about insight and self-reflection on a daily basis. On your drive home is where she really recommended that. And I've used that practice now for 20 years. And so I always end my day by thinking what went well and what didn't go well today. Because every day, even if you think you've had the worst day, something went okay. You'll find something. And then at the same time, even if you think you nailed it everywhere, there's something you could have improved on. And I find in life, we would all benefit from more insight. So after these difficult conversations, I really try to think, not necessarily how badly that person must have felt, because their response to it, I can't do anything about their response to it, but could I have slowed down? You know, when you get nervous, you talk too fast. Could I have been more specific? Could the timing have been differently? And at the same time, what are the things that I said that I think really got across, that I think that I well prepared? And so I do that insight practice with all of these difficult conversations. As painful as that is for me too, but I think it also allows me to think the next time I see the person, how I can tweak. You know, if I think something hasn't landed on them exactly how I need it to the first time, how can I tweak that the second time to do that? And then, yes, you know, riding my Peloton and drinking are both things that we do as well.
Yeah. when the situations get, when conversations can get really intense and emotions are flaring, how do you handle those? And that is both the emotions of the other person as well as the emotions it's creating inside of you.
Right. It's difficult to check yourself, right? And I have long realized, my husband told me a long time ago, in a fight and flight, you're a fight. You know, you're gonna keep fighting. And so my most difficult part in those conversations is to not prolong them. And so oftentimes you're giving people difficult news and you're working through them and they really want to blame you for it, right? Like we had a recent person here who left and left on her own accord, but was very clear with every single person that she spoke with that she was leaving because of me. And that's difficult. You don't want, you know, it's difficult to hear somebody's leaving their job after 20 years because of you or what their perceived relationship with you is. It's difficult that they're telling, you know, 50 people about that. And so I try to approach every day evenly. I think it's not helpful for the organization if my moods are, I try to be even. That's a big portion. I try these conversations to be really even. And sometimes it's okay. Once I had to say to a person who was really heated and I could feel myself getting really heated in that conversation, I said, so-and-so, I'm going to ask you to leave now because I don't want either of us to say anything that's going to impact what happens next. So we're going to take a break and we're going to touch base again in 2 days when we've both had a chance to take a couple breaths and come back to the table. People oftentimes don't want to walk away from those conversations, right? Because they're trying to convince you that you're wrong and you're really heated because you feel like you've done all of these things for them. And sometimes you just need to take a break and know yourself and them well enough as to when the right moment of that is. But explain why you're taking a break. was the other piece I think was important when I talked to her. I was like, I just don't want us, either of us, to say anything that we're going to regret. But sometimes you can't do that. And so sometimes I've realized in conversations that I have to stop talking and just manage myself, because nothing I'm going to say anymore is going to be helpful. And so it's really that self-modulation. There's no right answer to it, but I've stopped conversations. I've stopped talking in conversations. Sometimes I've said, I'm sorry, I just don't see it that way, when people are trying to convince me why I'm wrong. And, you know, and then going back and really thinking, was I wrong? Like taking a minute and making sure, like, what, you know, have I not seen this in the full way that I should? And sometimes the answer is yes. And sometimes I have to go back to people and I've thought a lot about what you said. You've made some really good points, and this is where I think we go from here. But it's not unusual for those conversations to get heated, especially the second time, is what I find. The first time people are like a little bit in shock when you're talking to them about, most people think that they're doing a good job and working really hard. So when you're providing them a different view of that, that's difficult for them to hear. And then they spend like a couple of days thinking about all the reasons that you're wrong, and they come at you harder the second time.
Yeah. So self-regulation, self-modulation is really the key. Knowing yourself and knowing your triggers is really the key there.
And don't think you have to finish that conversation in that moment. Sometimes you can. Sometimes
right.
It's just not the right time.
Yeah. Just the right time to stop. You know, I think this is one of the hardest leadership skills for anybody. The one thing that I find very striking is that oftentimes leaders can resist having these conversations. They may be afraid. It's too uncomfortable. They believe it's futile. Nothing will change. If I even try to have this conversation, it won't be any different. What advice would you give to folks around that?
I would argue I have never had a conversation too soon, a difficult conversation too soon. I fall into the bucket of trying to generally by the time I've had a difficult conversation, it's a little bit later than I should have. And that's, I would say, except for maybe organizational performance, which is a little bit of an easier skill set for me. But individual performance, I would say almost all the time, I'm like, I should have said that. I should have had that conversation a week ago, 2 weeks ago, a month ago, because you avoid it, because you don't want to do it. And you might carry that with you. None of this is going to make a difference. They're not going to be able to do it, or my boss isn't going to listen to me. But you owe it to yourself, and you owe it to the people that work for you to have those conversations, because they deserve to be in a role that they're fulfilled in, that makes them happy, and that's meeting the needs of the organization. Nobody wants to be the person that everybody is saying, or that you're saying, their boss is saying, they're really doing a terrible job, but I just can't have that conversation today. Mm-hmm. Nobody wants to be that person. And so I really look at it as people deserve to be in the right spot in the organization, and they deserve to have that feedback. It's taken a long time for me to get to a point where I'm really comfortable with difficult feedback, but it's difficult every time. I want to do a good job. And so having it sooner rather than later is always the right answer, even when it's difficult. And knowing that even if it's not going to change the outcome, you owe your team the steps for them to have the self-awareness to move to a different spot, or to develop their skills so that they're able to stay where they are and grow and flourish and be a productive member of the team, or for you to make your own transition.
Right, right. Well, this has been fabulous, Shannon.
It's so fun.
Yeah, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it. And I know our listeners will as well. This is going to be great learning for everybody. So thank you.
Thank you, Allison.